Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, Redheads, to another episode of the Redheads Book Club November edition. Technically our spooky episode because we just read our October book. I'm here with the girls. I'm not going to lie, sometimes getting the Redheads all at the same time in the same room with the ability to record is harder than other times. This was one of those months where it was all my fault. I could not find the time. So I'm so glad to finally be here with my girly swirlies ready to discuss books. Hi, everyone. Becky, how are you? Let's start with you. One, because it's your month, and two, because you spent the month on your honeymoon. Can you tell us about that?
My month was incredible. And just an FYI to the Redheads, the last time we got together, I recapped my wedding. This time we're getting together, I'm recapping my honeymoon. This is the most interesting my life will ever be. Here on forward, I will have nothing interesting to contribute. But I had an amazing honeymoon. I went to Africa. We went to Uganda and Tanzania and then an island off the coast of Tanzania, which was the most special, spectacular place I've ever been in my entire lifetime. There were highlights aplenty. I went hiking with gorillas, and that was remarkable. I saw the big five, including a black rhino. There's like 10 left in the Serengeti. And the people in Africa are just the kindest, warmest, most incredible humans I've ever had the pleasure of spending time with. So I just was like, my soul was nourished.
Not to be dumb, but what's the big five?
Oh, the big five are animals that you see on safari, and they are the five animals that are not hunted by anyone else. So rhinos, elephants, lions, leopards, and buffalo.
That was impressive. Those are the big five. Pulled wow. that out.
There, did you guys know the big five?
Definitely not.
No. Okay, I just pretended so to.
Yeah. I was like, is this something I should know? At first, I thought it was going to be like this, the eight wonders of the world sort of thing. Like you saw, you know.
I was like the Jackson Five.
Machu Picchu.
I'm sorry, that's safari lingo.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're better than us because you went on safari.
And I'm really sorry that I should have explained it, you guys. Yeah, no, I.
To your uncultured swine friends.
Literally.
Are swine part of the big five?
You're honestly fortunate that we are still in this crew together now that I'm a safari girly.
Totally. So did you read a lot on your honeymoon? Do you have a lot to contribute to this episode?
Finally, you guys, I have something to contribute, but not as much as everybody expected. Everyone primed me to have the most amount of time. They're like, in between your morning and evening safaris, you're just going to lay around and do nothing. I was in a car all day, every day, seeing animals, or we were traveling. I had not 1 minute to spare until we got to the island. So I read then, but I had not 30 seconds. I could barely even text you bitches. Like, I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I am in the middle of nowhere. I have no service and I'm not reading. But I did get a few in at the end of the trip, which was lovely.
That's good that you had such an active honeymoon, because as we've discussed, I don't know, on this podcast, but we talk about it on the toast sometimes, how like a honeymoon is kind of just like designed to make you hate your new spouse because you spend so much time together with nothing to do.
Well, it's funny because our island portion was like this amazing private island, which like I did not realize. And we got there and we were literally the only ones there. And I was like, I gotta get out. Like, I love Evan more than anything, but like,
he, you want to keep it that way.
He was the only one there, and I was like, it's been 5 days. I have got to see another soul besides like the people who are helping us out here.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you guys.
So, like, that's people's entire honeymoons for, like, 2+ weeks. And I'm like, wait, what? No. Like, I got to get, like, a crowd of, like, 60 in my vicinity.
Yeah, that's your safari troop. Did you make friends on your safari?
Oh, we did make friends. Hey, Daniela. Hey, Hector. Oh, they were in our God.
Do they know that you do a podcast?
Well, that's why I said hi, because they, like, eventually came out that I am part of this incredible podcast situation. And we met a couple from Mexico City who we were in, like, the Serengeti with. They were, like, in our safari car. They were also honeymooning, and they were so, so sweet. And Danielle is a big reader, so I was like, please listen. She just read Fourth Wing and loved it. I was like, listen to the epi.
Oh, my God. Perfection. Hi, Daniela. Hi, Hector.
Hi, Daniela. Hi, Hector.
Dana, do you not want to say hi to Hector?
Oh, I was
Daniela?
Waiting for you to introduce Matthias.
Gosh, don't even
more friends
started. More friends. Just I'm telling you guys, like, I my soul was like my heart was touched by the people that
you
I
left
met
your
there.
Heart in Africa.
I left my heart in Africa. I wept when I told Dana about it. That was like 7 days after I left. I was like obviously unwell, like, please someone do like a wellness check in like the next 36 hours.
I'm so glad you had such an amazing trip though.
It was amazing. It's such an amazing continent, and the countries that we visited, incredible. There's so much to do and see, and Uganda is the most underrated country in the entire world. Go visit.
Yeah, wow. I'll just go tomorrow.
Yeah, make that happen. Just a little weekend spurt.
Yeah, a weekend warrior.
Well, we're happy to have you back. Happy to have you on the episode with all of your new insights to contribute. Dana, how are you doing?
Oh, everything is going to pale in comparison to that. I'm so jealous of Ritz's past month adventures. I've been the same. I had a lot of weddings this month. I saw Jax in Florida, which was so epic. And now I'm just like cruising through the end of Q4, end of the year.
End of Q4, holiday season. We're coming into Dana's month. I'm really excited for what you have up your sleeve. I'm not confirmed on what we're reading next month, but I think I know and I'm excited. I agree. All of our recaps are going to pale in comparison to Rebecca's, but we could, you know, give it a shot. Snitch, anything to compete with?
Literally nothing to compete with except for my Halloween costume. That was nice.
You looked incredible.
Thank you so much.
I the reputation your, one. Fairly the Odd Parents won the most snitch.
Wow, really?
Yeah that was really cute.
That was, I guess, that was a fraction of the cost, though.
I guess I have a bone to pick. Yeah, it was free because I gave you my dress.
Well, I had to get the other dress, but yeah.
I guess I have a bone to pick with the reputation costume.
Okay.
Because you didn't tell me about it.
Yeah.
Like, I found out on Instagram just, like, some slob.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't tell you about it. But, like, also, I don't even think you, like, commented on my posts or, like, DM'd me about
it. She was hurt.
Like, you didn't even say
anything. Now that I'm reflecting on it, because I was genuinely in shock that you had made, like, a custom costume, went to all this trouble, and, like, didn't tell me. That's just, like, stuff that we talk about. And if I had known that you were going to be Taylor Reputation, like, I would have come up with my comment in my head, but I was so shocked and put on the spot, I didn't know what to say.
I don't even think you liked it.
No, I think I did.
I don't think you did.
I actually think you muted her.
No, literally.
No, after that, because I was so hurt. No, let's see. Okay. I liked the one of you on the floor. That is liked.
The reel?
I liked your reel.
Okay.
I did. And I liked the one in front of the white wall, because I'm just like some random person on your Instagram feed. I'm nobody special. Number.
Snitch, it sounds like
I'm
you noticed
a number.
Her activity on your Instagram. So you should have reached out to sis.
Well, because
like,
I recently noticed. I recently noticed that like none of my sisters comment on my Instagram posts. And like everyone comments on each other's, but nobody comments on mine. And like maybe it's because I like post a lot and like so it's just like whatever.
Let me tell you, because I did comment on Claudia's. The thing is, like, I didn't have nothing came to mind for what to say. And it might be because I was unprepared. Like, if I knew you were going to be Reputation, like, I would have thought through lyrics. Like, I just would have been thinking about Reputation. Something would have come to mind. And I just feel like, also with Claudia, like, we're always doing, like, show stuff. So I can just write, like, you know, yet ugly. And that works. But with you, like, I need to put in more effort. And I just, I was speechless.
I kind of hear you, though. Like, you can't put it into words, but, like, it's hurtful, like, not getting that comment when, like, you know the other sisters are.
1,000%.
No, literally, I just want you to know, I, like, attempted to comment on your Reputation thing when, like, you revealed it, and I couldn't think of something, like,
is that a loss for words?
Relevant
you left her speechless.
I rendered her speechless.
No, I was speechless. And it's like when I leave a comment, I want it to be, you know, like break the internet. And I feel like I'm always like, oh, my God, the bunk is quaking. So I want it to be like better right. than
You're
that.
You're not going
to
be like cute outfit.
So, yeah. And so the bunk
I'm
wasn't
all
quaking.
Or nothing. No, the bunk is always quaking. But then like if you look at all of my comments on your Instagram, it's like camper this counts that. Like I wanted to say something new and I couldn't think of anything. So I didn't do anything, honestly.
It's okay.
Jax, how are you? Speaking of epic Halloween costumes, oh my God.
Right, Halloween, how fun was that? I'm good, just like really busy and booked and reading books and excited to have, you know, the next 45 minutes with you guys to catch up on all of those things. I was saying to Claudia on the Patreon, you know, the only me time I get these days is when I'm like up in my studio podcasting. So this is leisure for me. This is fun.
Good.
Wow. I'm having fun.
I sound like it.
I'm having so much fun. This is me hanging out with my friends.
Literally.
Okay, well, let's get into this month's book. We read The Dead Romantics by Ashley Poston. It was a Becky's Choice, a little bit of a spooktacular book for the spooky season. Becky, you are in charge of recapping this book, which should be decently easy. Let's give it a go.
Yeah.
Let us give a go. The Dead Romantics features our main character, Florence Day. She's a ghostwriter in New York City for one of the most prolific romance authors in the industry. And she has a problem, ladies and gentlemen. After a terrible breakup, she no longer believes in love. So when her new editor, a hottie named Ben, won't give her an extension on her book deadline, Florence prepares to kiss her career goodbye. But then she gets a phone call that she never wanted to receive, and she has to return home for the first time in a decade to help her family bury her beloved father who passed away. So for 10 years, Florence has run from her hometown, and she's run away from her loving family and their funeral parlor family business. So she arrives home in her South Carolina town, where we learn a very interesting detail about her life, that she can see and interact with ghosts. And this is also a gift that her father had. So it turns out this ghost who shows up at her doorstep is her hottie editor, Ben, who was hit by a car a day earlier. I don't mean to laugh, but it is like, what
it's
a coincidence.
Unlikely.
It's unlikely. It's unlikely.
What a convenient coincidence.
It's a coincidence unlike any other. He apparently has unfinished ghost business that he needs Florence's help with. The plot continues with a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and it includes a to-do list of funeral arrangements for her dad. All the while, Florence is accompanied by Ben the ghost, and it appears the two are falling in love. I'm sorry. It's just okay, so unlikely. The yeah. day of the funeral arrives, and Ben appears to be getting pulled back into the afterlife abyss. But then a twist. Spoiler alert. He's actually alive, and he has awoken from his coma. So it's clear that him getting pulled back was actually him getting pulled back into real life. So fast forward to Florence returning back to New York City, to her ghostwriting, and her belief in love has been reinstated. And then she and Ben fall in love IRL versus whatever they were trying to do before. And all in all, happy endings do exist.
They fall in love IRL as opposed to ghost fucking.
Great recap.
I thought that that's where the book was going, by the way.
No, but they couldn't touch each other. So I was wondering where it was going to go. I did think there would be like a sex scene with the ghost in some way. There tried to be, but it ended pretty quickly, thankfully.
Literally. She like put the kibosh on it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, no. So let's get into this book. Rebecca, let's start with you. Did you like the book? Overall thoughts?
You know, I thought the book was cute. I did think it was a little disjointed. It like went on a little too long. There were a lot of different pieces. I wasn't positive if this was going to be a book about grief. I didn't know if this was going to be a book about love. It was sort of a blend of both. There were just too many pieces for me to like confidently be like, I loved it. But like, I didn't mind reading it. It was just, it went on a little too long and it was a little too confusing.
Okay. I'm going to go in order of, I think, ascending to descending. Snitch, what did you think?
Oh, wow. Really? You think I would be number two in liking it?
Yes, I do, because it was like romance, smutty, like non-serious.
Yeah, but like as someone who like never healed from the trauma of her father's death, like I don't know that this book was the book for me.
No, I was really, really upset while I was reading it because I knew it was going to affect you guys, and I'm sorry.
It didn't affect me, don't worry. I did call Snitch to make sure that she was okay.
Snitch, and were you okay?
Tell them what you told me, which was fair.
I was okay. Like in the beginning when I realized that it was like about this, I was like, oh, fuck, whatever. And then, like, as I realized the whole fucking book was about this, like, at that point, I just became immune to it. And, like, I was okay. Also, like, I can't explain it. Maybe because of all, like, the other atrocities currently going on in the world. Like, yeah. I couldn't relate to what she was going through at the time.
Do you think that's why you couldn't relate, or because you've never fallen in love with a ghost?
No, I'm just talking about, like, the grief and the mourning. I'm not talking about the spirits.
Yeah, of like this being a bad thing that happened to her, like even her boyfriend stealing her book stories, like, oh, that's such a bad thing that happened to you. And then I'm like, well, I could tell you a couple bad things that could happen to you.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to like judge someone's grief, but like to be frank, like it seemed like she was mostly into Ben and like a little less focused on the passing of her father.
Yeah, totally. But also, I mean, I don't know what I found about this book. Like it was fine. Like honestly, it was fine. But it felt so dense. Like it was only like 360 pages, which normally I feel like
who's counting?
Which normally I feel like I can fly through. And it took me so long. I think it took me longer than like Fourth Wing. Like the number just wasn't going up on the percentage. Like it was just never ending. And that makes me think I didn't like it.
Yeah. Okay. So you were like mid.
I was mid.
You were mid.
I think I'll go next in saying I just want to be fair. Even if this book had been better, I don't know that I would have been able to appreciate it because my mind is just in a million other places right now. And it was hard to really focus on something so unserious. Plus, like the unrealistic elements of it, it just was kind of hard to get into. So I wouldn't really even know if it was good. But I don't think that it was. I didn't love most of it. The only thing that I did like was I only like the parts in New York City, whereas I usually feel the opposite. It's like, let's get to the small town and mm-hmm. meet the guy. But I liked the beginning in the city. And then I was like kind of bummed when she had to go home and then live in a funeral home and like, you know, I don't know, interact with crows and ghosts and walk through cemeteries. Not for me. And then when they landed back in LaGuardia, I was like into it again. I was excited for like when she went. I just liked like the New York City editor publishing lifestyle stuff and not so much like the South Carolina ghost town funeral parlor. But overall, it did not grip me. There were lines in there that really made me cringe, but then there were also lines that I highlighted. Like there was one or two where I was like, I like that. I do. I like it. So it was odd, but I appreciated reading a ghost story and I read most of it October 29th through 31st, so I was really in Halloween, and it was the perfect book to read for a Halloween romance. Sure, yeah.
Feel that.
Dana?
I feel like I'm Dana. Simon on American Idol.
Yeah. You. By the way, you are.
You don't need to be.
So, actually, I didn't find this difficult to get through. I finished it really quickly, and, like, the numbers were continuously going up for me, so I'll start on a positive that I flew through it.
That I finished it.
That I finished it.
Don't put words in her mouth.
That being said, I think this was one of the worst books I've ever read in my entire life. I think Bruno and Magnolia could have written a more sophisticated novel.
They are so, so smart.
I don't know where to begin because I don't know where the story began. Like, I thought it was going to be, oh, this kind of like procrastinator can't finish her damn book. It's going to be all about how she's going to like actually find love and be able to write the ending. But then her dad, who we hadn't even like really met beyond a few stories, died. I'm like, oh, wait, now it's just like dealing with her dad's grief. And then when Ben died, I was like, fuck, no, no, no way. When he showed up and she wasn't even fazed. She's like, oh, what's this ghost doing here? I'll explore this later. Like, didn't even Google him till a week later to find out what had happened.
Right. She didn't even Google him. She asked her friend.
Wait, 100%. By the way, that was bizarre. Like, I remember thinking that, being like, I feel like he might be awake. And, like, and also when she Googled it and there was no information about the funeral, it's like, why do you think? Because he's not
actually
dead.
That was like the well, most complex plot device that he was in a coma. Like at the end, I was like, oh, okay, some thought went into this.
Oh, like, I like saw
yeah, but it was also
coming.
Like a little too convenient, like too much of a happy ending as opposed to her. I don't know. Maybe she would have like offed herself to be with him forever.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that.
Same. I was hoping that. I was like, that would make same. Things interesting. The writing I can't even get into, but I will say the italics. Oh my God, girl. Like, chill with the control I button. Like, every other word was in italics for emphasis. Like, there are ways to get your point across without emphasizing a document. So that kind of. Oh.
I didn't notice that.
Open any page. Open one page. You'll see 1,000 italics. Oh, wow. The thing I did like the most about the writing were the chapter titles. I thought those were really punny with their, like, spooky.
Yeah, they were cute.
Yeah, so I enjoyed reading the titles of each chapter.
I will say this book made me appreciate the book I Could Live Here Forever. We said this when we read that book, that she never had writer's block, and because that's like a really frustrating thing to read about.
Yes.
And it was really annoying, like, that she had writer's block, and also she had writer's block for the obituary, and then was like, and then I wrote the obituary, and it was very good.
Oh.
They never, like, actually showed her exceptional writing. Wait,
yeah, and get your shit more. Together. Start, like, doing your deadlines. Like, why are you going out and getting drunk? This is due tomorrow. That drove me
crazy.
That
is what frustrated me so much. She had a to-do list for her father's funeral, and you are out fucking around walking through
ghost.
Cemeteries. I was like, go home. Be responsible. Lady, 100%. Come on.
No, my personality is just very type A with, like, deadlines and getting things done. So I was, like, twitching. I was like, how are you at a bar right now? Oh, and when she grabbed Ben's face and started making out with him outside the bar, I was like, what is happening?
I literally gripped my Kindle with cringe. But what I did like about the book is that, like, from the minute she walked into his office, she thought he was hot and, like, contemplated the idea of hooking up with him. Whereas I feel like so many times in these books, it's like, I'm heartbroken. I don't believe in love. And the most charming guy is, like, staring you in the face. It doesn't even occur to you that, like, you might like him. I'm actually reading another book that I had to put down for a second that's just like that, where it's like, I don't believe in love yet. I'm hanging out with this guy every single day, and it just never crossed my mind that he could be the one for me. So I was glad to see that, like, from the minute she saw Ben, like, her antennas went up, like, oh, hunky.
Yeah, you're
hunky
so
dory.
Right.
Hunky
like, dory. It would have been more frustrating if they saw each other on the street and it was this prolonged story, but she just grabbed his face.
Yeah, and, like, he was a very good suitor, like, from the beginning. He wasn't, like, you know, enemies to lovers. Not like, there was nothing like that. He was always very supportive of her and outwardly handsome.
But I'll argue that her making out with him was not required for the progression of the story at all. They never addressed it.
Not agree. Rebecca, not at all. Even when they, like, were in his office at the last scene and she goes in, like, feeling awkward, it's like, maybe feel awkward because you guys made out the night before he was hit by a car.
100%. I was like, we're not gonna talk about this at all.
That is so true. It was not necessary. It maybe should have been taken out, the making out.
Yeah, I thought it was
so,
just,
so random.
Yeah, I thought the book was going in a totally different direction solely because of the makeout.
Dana, yeah. I just opened my Kindle and I looked at any book, any page, and there is italics across the board.
It was crazy.
She was not exaggerating.
Once you noticed it, you couldn't stop. It's also just like a lazy rhetorical device. Like, you could get across emphasis without the italic button.
Ooh, mic drop, lazy rhetorical device.
Damn. Is that Benji Adner or Dana Holzberg, editor at large?
Wow.
Okay, let's go through the DBQs. The book did have a discussion guide, so it is not on my shit list. First up, Florence is a ghostwriter for Ann Nichols. Do you think books written by ghostwriters are just as important to an author's legacy as those written by the authors themselves? Are really popular authors often ghostwritten, or is that not like a huge scandal?
It's a great point.
I don't think this is answering the question, but like my take on ghostwriters is it depends on the severity. Like if your ghostwriting is synonymous with just kind of editing and like cleaning things up, I think that's totally fine. If you straight up hire someone to write verbatim your story, like just call it a biography and make that person the author. Don't pretend it's an autobiography.
It's just like, I thought your job was to be a writer. You know?
Yeah, no, especially for a celebrity, even if you are like Britney Spears, she had a ghostwriter who listened to like her counseling sessions, I think, and then wrote her book. Like that could still be written by Britney Spears because it's like her words. But like it's as if J.K. Rowling had a ghostwriter. It's
yeah.
Like, or you're, like, you're not, like if you're not an author, yeah. What are you?
It's like Colleen Hoover having totally. A ghostwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, then it's, yeah.
So I would say it would impact someone's legacy.
Yeah, scandalous.
Scandal.
Next. And it was like she only did it because she was passing away. She like knew she was going to die, so she wanted to finish her contract. Like that was really what was most important.
Oh, and when we learned that it wasn't even Ann Nichols, it was her ghost that asked her to be a ghostwriter.
And in my head, I'm like, how did that really come to fruition? Like, this ghost asked you, and I'm like, did a contract get sent through?
Yeah.
Who then told the agent, like, I want this writer?
Plot hole.
I mean, there was a million plot holes.
I think also the author was a little excited. This author of the book was excited by the idea of it being a ghost story about a ghost writer. Like, I think that she was trying to, like, fit that.
Yes.
100%.
And it was very heavy-handed. Like, she spelled it out for us. She was like, I'm a ghost writer and I see ghosts in one of the sentences. It's like, no, we got that. Like, we
figured. To be honest, I didn't put it together till right now. Did anyone else?
Yeah, we put it together.
Oh, snitch, did you?
That what?
She's a ghostwriter who sees ghosts?
Yeah.
I told you, I was really checked out, okay?
Okay, it's fine. Yeah, yeah.
Next. I still love you. I know there's going to be a listener who's like, Jax, I'm with you. Next, usually keeping secrets can shake a person's trust in someone else. But Florence's dad kept the secret that he knew who Florence ghost wrote for and had read all of those books. Do you think some secrets can actually build trust once revealed? Okay, these questions are horrible, but at least, but I do want to talk about the fact that she never told her dad who she ghost wrote it for. She regretted that so much, and then it turned out he knew. Like, why can't you tell your parents?
1,000%. Like, the fact that she won't tell her fucking brother, I'm like, tell him. You think he's going to, like, slander your name across, like, billboards in New York City? No one cares who you write for.
Yeah.
Just tell your family.
Yeah, like, they'll keep your secret. Oh, and by the way, they were keeping your secret. And don't worry, Florence. We'll keep your secret.
By the way, and their town was, like, Crowley Corners, because apparently the whole fucking town knew, and they didn't say anything.
Including the bitch who chose the thing for the book club.
Oh, by the way, can we talk about that?
By the way, this book would have been awesome if it was about her solving the murder mystery using her ghost-like ESP to save a life. Like, yeah. I wish we got more into that. It was so unrelatable that she was this, like, victim complex. Everyone was mean to me because I spoke to ghosts and saved someone. It's like, yo, own it. You're confident in everything else. You go into the book club and saying, I forgive you. The girl's probably like, for what?
For someone who is so, like, just trying to heal from her wounds of being shit-talked during high school, she's talking quite openly to a ghost all corners of the town. She can't go 1 minute without talking to Ben in the most public of places, who is a ghost. I'm like, everyone's going to see you talking to yourself. Aren't you concerned about this? Isn't this why you haven't showed up for 10 years and here you are?
Yeah, also, she kept talking about this big murder that she solved, but then, like, she never really talked about how she solved it, what happened.
That's my
point. Yeah, she said, like, oh, Harry's dad didn't think that anyone would find him so soon. It's like, oh, okay, so his dad killed him. How did you figure that out?
And then there was a point where we found out she had, like, a crush on him and was like...
Right. And does she like a lot of the ghosts that she's... Because she liked Harry, she liked Ben. Is it always a handsome suitor of a ghost?
That seemed like the real story to me that they barely scraped the surface of.
Yeah. Next, there are many depictions of afterlives in the media. Ghosts, reapers, spirits, from all different cultures. Why do you think the theme of death is so universally explored in stories and the concept of life, or some semblance of it, after death?
I think it's like the only thing that's really unknown. So it's ripe for interpretation because nobody has the answer. And it's just like, it's so conceptually opaque. Where do you go? What's our purpose? What happens? Like, it's food for fodder.
It's universal.
Was that really like the afterlife though? Because at the end of whatever thing they were solving, they went away somewhere.
Yeah, no, it was an afterlife, but not the afterlife. It was kind of like a purgatory, unfinished business sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well said. Plus one.
Next, death and how a person handles it is a big part of the novel. If you could leave a list behind for your loved ones, like Xavier does in the story, what would be on it?
Like, a lot of Fleetwood Mac played at my funeral and, like, a bunch of fresh flowers and, like, produce from the farmer's market out to all.
We'll make it happen.
A live performance of Luke Combs singing Even Though I'm Leaving.
Oh. Okay.
And then I want, I'm being walked down the aisle in my coffin, like, I want a procession of cavaliers walking, like, along. Oh. And then I would like the coffin to be lavender.
Oh.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
I want Only One by Kanye West played and See You Again by Wiz Khalifa. I've definitely thought about this before. Our friend Heather from Colgate used to always say to me, she's like, I know you've thought about the funeral playlist. If you want to send me it, I'll make sure we play it.
You love a playlist.
Love a playlist. Like, it's just, it's interesting to fantasize about, you know? Like, what logistics do you want to happen?
I really haven't given it much thought, but I think I would want The Climb to be played.
Beautiful.
Because you're climbing to heaven.
No, and it's like, one, that's my song, too. The song is, like, about how it's about the journey, and, like, that was my journey.
That's beautiful.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay. If Ben and Florence were put in a Punder Dome, Dana, what's that?
Like, a battle of wits and puns?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. If they were put in a Punder Dome, who do you think would win? Kidding, but in truth, do you think this is the question of, like, from the fucking book guide? This is the question, verbatim. If Ben and Florence were put in a Punder Dome, who do you think would win? Kidding, but in truth, do you think humor and tragedy go hand in hand? Why or why not? I think for a lot of people it does, and I think it's a really good coping mechanism, and that's why they do go hand in hand.
Beautiful. Plus one.
But I don't think they go hand in hand for unfunny people.
I didn't realize they were supposed to be funny.
They had, like, some, you know, because she was, like, saying about something about a mouse, and he was like, are they maestroing? Like, maestro?
Oh, they're dumb puns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're dumb. This is a question about their dumb puns. What did you think about
them?
No,
they made so many. Like, about death a lot. About, like, ghostwriting, I think.
Yeah, and he was like, romance isn't dead, or love isn't dead, and she's like, well, you are.
I definitely, ooh, though, relate to, like, humor and tragedy going together. So for that, I'm down. Like, that would be my coping strategy.
Yeah.
But their puns were, like, a little heavy-handed.
And they were a little too intricate to be believable that someone would come up with them off the cuff who isn't a comedian.
Who can't
I guess they are... They were both, like, literary writers, so maybe they have a way with words. But still, they were, like, when he said that maestros thing, I was like, that's fucking weird. Like, that's a little too jokey. Next question. Do you feel Lee Marlowe was justified in writing When the Dead Sing? Do you think original ideas exist? Or do we all pull inspiration, knowingly or not, from the lives, from the experiences we've had and the people we've met throughout our lives?
No, he was not justified at all. He was obviously a snake.
Yeah, that was, like, I understand, like, you're, like, you can be inspired by something that you, like, see or hear. But she, like, told him a full story.
And, but, like, here's the thing. She never admitted to him that it was her life. She was pretending like these were stories about someone. So, like, at least someone can finish a book, you know?
No, but that also makes it worse. That makes it worse because it also makes, he thought he was stealing her stories.
No, like, he was fully stealing her stories and passing them as his own. And then the fact that he did not tell her he was doing it was indicative of his guilt.
Like, if he wrote a book about her, that would still be wrong, but he can write about whatever he sees. But he wrote a book of her stories. That does make it worse. Even though it turned out they weren't stories.
You're so right, Snitch, though. It was so funny when his retort was like, bitch, you were never going to write it.
Yeah.
No, so no, true. Dana, it was Bunny. You were never going to write it.
Stop. Bunny.
Also, When the Dead Sing, it's giving Where the Crawdads Sing.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was a scandal with Crawdads about it, like, not being an original story.
Oh.
Or something about, no, this scandal was different. It was about the author was involved in some sort of revenge killing in real life.
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
Yeah. And then the book is about a revenge killing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Look it up. Next, if Ben and Florence had a sequel, what do you think it would be about? How do you think Ben will handle his newfound power of seeing dead people? Right, I forgot.
If there was a sequel, which I highly recommend if you are the author that you don't make one, that it would be like, I think it should be Ben and Florence, like, solving, like, not murders, but, like, solving, like, stuff with the
stories.
Ghosts. Yeah, solving stories.
I'm going to take that and tweak it. I think it should be Ben and Florence talking to ghosts and hearing their stories and writing those books.
That's cute.
And, like, bringing justice to people through, like, sharing their stories and, like, just, like, writing these compelling stories.
That's cute.
It made me so mad how long it took for them to get together after he came out of the coma. Like,
no, that made no sense because apparently he knew.
ridiculous.
Okay. Okay. I just want to say, I thought about this and it actually made sense because I think, yes, he knew, but he thought for sure he dreamt the whole thing. It was his dream. No. He was asleep. So it's like if you went to sleep and had a dream about someone, you would think about them differently, but you would never think that they had the same dream as you.
I disagree. So here, listen, I think it's like, I don't think it's like he thought it, of course he thought of it as a dream. I don't think it was like he should have like gone up to her and been like, remember about the time we had? No, but I think he now was feeling differently about her, so he should have like reached out, gone for coffee, and started to like, you know, he's like, maybe this is something that we can like make happen in the real world, because I know like in my dream I felt about you that way. I don't think it's like, hey, do you remember what happened? It's like, oh, like maybe let's like, let's see if this could happen.
Okay, I agree, except he might have been feeling, like, too weird to be around her, because it's like, I love her based on a dream that I had, and, like, how do I just go to call? You know what I mean? Like, and then the what? He would, like, convince her to fall in love with him and never, like, tell her.
No, not convince her. Just, like, let it take on, like, a life of its own. And if they did fall in love, he'd be like, by the way, like, the craziest thing, like, I had this, like, dream. And if she didn't remember, he'd be like, he'd be like, I had this dream, and, like, I literally fell in love with you, and it's what made me want to text you. Like,
yeah, but that's not that weird. The onus was definitely on her because she knew it wasn't a dream and she like figured out what had happened.
1,000%.
She should have gone in and been like, do you remember? And if he didn't, like, okay, then proceed
like she gets thwarted by like one shadow of a human in his hospital room and she's like, oh, I tried.
Yeah, she flew all this way and now just because the one person he knew in his life actually sat by his hospital bed, like she thinks she should
literally
be deterred.
Left her grieving family on the day of her dad's funeral to get home, and then she didn't even see him. It is like so cowardly.
And she was a shit daughter. She was there for 5 seconds and was like, I'm getting a hotel.
And the whole time she was there, she was distracted by this ghost.
Yeah.
Wait, I also want to say one thing that was a plot hole, because she said how her family would always come visit her in New York because they knew she couldn't go home because she solved a murder and people were mean to her. Still don't understand why you can't go home and visit your family, but okay. But then she also said that growing up, her family could never take vacations because they were the town
funeral
mortuary, but like they came up for New Year's every year. Now all of a sudden we could take vacations.
Also, the book started with like her hiding her journals under the floor of the then we heard like one more thing about it. I was like, everything that happened, I'm like, this doesn't tie to anything.
Also, like the way that the first conversation she had on the phone with her brother, I had to reread so many times because I was like, she's not talking to her brother like this. It was like about how like he's a hottie and like it was about smut. Like you don't talk, like it was so weird. And not how siblings speak to one another. And then, like, it was just also, like, the openness within her family about all the smuttiness. And, like, the fact that her dad read her smutty books. Like, no.
And there was not like, even a good smut scene. Like, their smut scene was painful.
Yeah.
Seeing that her dad had found her stash, quote, unquote,
and
stash.
And why did she keep calling it a stash?
No idea. But, like, that was, like, her, like, smut stash. I was like, your poor father.
Yeah.
You don't let him know the good work that you're writing, and instead he finds your nasty trash.
But also, we find out at the end that he did know that she was ghostwriting for Ann Nichols. How?
He just, like, read the books and knew it was her because he knew his daughter so well.
Please. Please.
I know. Such BS.
Okay, next it's time for the redhead questions. We got a few, and they're super funny. So did anyone else see the plot from the very beginning? I thought the first time we met Ben as a ghost and he disappeared, that meant that he was actually alive still in an in-between place but not fully dead. And at the end, he would wake up and they would be together IRL. Did anyone see that?
I saw that coming.
I hoped, like, maybe he could come back from the dead for her, but she said she sees ghosts. She never let us know it was a gray area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was convinced that she was going to off herself. I never thought he was alive.
I did think it was
maybe going in that direction too, Rit. Like, it was and the only in way.
The whole book, she was like, whenever she would be reminded to be sad, it would be, like, about her dad. But, like, I would be more sad that I'm falling in love with someone that I will never be able to be with.
1,000%. I was like, wow, she's about to get hit hard when he is no longer around to be a distraction from her father's death. And then she realizes that, like, she's, like, lost this person that she finally had feelings for. Like, that's a double whammy. And I was like, you're screwed, girlfriend.
Yeah. Next, do you feel that Florence was an unreliable narrator? I found the discourse about her feeling like a coward who runs away versus someone who does everything by themselves confusing. To me, those are almost opposites, and I found it distracting as to which narrative was actually reflective of her character, her self-diagnosis of her family's constant remarks about how she always is.
Great question.
I actually don't find them at odds with each other. I think that she deals with everything on her own. So she's like, this is my plan of action. I'm going to distance myself from the situation and like heal by myself in a new city and take on all of like what I'm experiencing from my past in high school solo. Yeah. And I think if she was like more collaborative and like more in touch with receiving help, she would have like opened up to her family and been like, this is what I'm going through. Any guidance?
Yeah. Question. You know what was she going weird? Through?
Wait, like, she was a hero.
You know what struck
me? The burden
me
was too much.
Very strange.
What?
Why did they leave her out of like those like will, estate, financial conversations?
And the sequel. Diner breakfast.
Yeah.
Sequel. We'll find out.
Because she was so fucking busy being obsessed with the ghost.
That like,
literally like gallivanting around town with Ben the ghost.
I don't think she was an unreliable narrator. I just think she was an unlikable and super annoying narrator. But we've had this conversation in other books, too. Like, I could live here forever. Was she unreliable? I don't think so. I think she was self-aware.
Can someone remind me what that book was about?
Oh, my God. With the drug addict boyfriend.
What?
Charlie, the drug addict boyfriend. She was at the writer's program in Wisconsin. Oh, my God.
Satchel, we read it 2 months ago.
It was about his heroin addiction.
Oh, yeah. And then he died.
Yeah.
And what we said is, like, unreliable narrators I associate with someone whose, like, mental state is altered. Like, they are not reporting accurate events because they're on drugs or they have a psychological disorder. So, like, I don't think she was unreliable. I just think she was annoying.
Agreed with that. Next, did you enjoy the breaking fourth wall moments of Florence and Ben discussing how to write a romance book in a real romance book? I thought it was quippy and cute how the author joked about moments being too corny while she was actually writing them. It was refreshing to read something very self-aware that didn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, I agree.
That was cute.
Yeah.
I liked the idea of it. Not always in practice. Like, it would go a little something like this.
No.
But it also was the way that it tied together in that office meeting.
Yeah,
but you know about the dream.
The game.
It kind of was refreshing to see an author just like dump her every thought on the page without any organizational schema. Like, there was no self-consciousness about her writing at all. And for that, I kind of appreciate it. Like, she just wrote exactly what she wanted to write. No editor.
Yeah, she didn't. Yeah. She had no Benji Andor.
That is so funny.
Guys, people love this book. It's
Really? The redheads.
They did like it. The comments have positive comments.
What? Oh, good.
I saw a thread.
I hope
redheads.
We're not making you hate
no,
it.
My
original that was bad.
Like, being like, I DNF'd it. Like, I couldn't believe this is the worst book they've ever chosen.
It was
dude,
half.
I saw
half.
Another thread that was all positive, one negative comment.
Wait, where was that thread?
In the redheads. In the redheads.
Okay, I'm gonna go and look. I didn't look at anything because I read it so late. So I haven't seen what the discourses, but I will say I did see a couple people, and people emailed this too, saying the author has written one other book that they loved.
I saw
so
that too.
Check out her other book.
No, I can confirm the responses were definitely divided. Like, this was not a 100% at either direction. People were definitely thinking different things.
But guys, Goodreads, 93% like this book, 4.4 out of 5.
Whoa.
Yeah,
I'm not going like, in that lake. Nothing like a self quote. Let's get into the moral of the story. What is the moral of the story?
My moral of the story was happy endings come in all shapes and sizes.
Everything is not as it seems.
How convenient.
That's good. What's dead may never die.
Ooh.
I came up with that on the spot.
Oh, a little salt.
Now it's time for the Hollywood treatment. If this were made into a movie or TV show, who would you cast as Florence and as Ben?
Florence, I had Caitlin Dever. She was in Booksmart, Ticket to Paradise. Yeah. Cute, but not like overtly hot, you know?
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah.
Snitch. I say her for everything, but she's like really universal. Christine.
You know what? I actually just saw a commercial for something Christine Froseth is in.
And what do you think?
It looked good. Dana, we saw the commercial together. It was like Victorian show. It looked like Bridgerton sort of thing. Mm. It was about a bunch of girls in big dresses. Dana, who'd you cast?
I had Anna Kendrick.
Hmm. I'm going to do Florence Pugh because it's Florence.
Oh, that's cute.
I also liked, one thing I liked about the book is how he called her Miss Day. I like that her last name was Day.
I was going to say the same thing.
I like that it was Day's Gone Funeral Home.
Same.
Yeah, that was cute.
That was cute. I like, yeah. Ben, who did you have? Rebecca?
I had Luke Grimes. He was in Yellowstone because I think he looks like a ghost.
Who was he in Yellowstone?
He was Casey, the brother.
Oh, nice-ish. He doesn't look like a publisher, but okay.
He doesn't look like a publisher. Like, he would have to shave his beard, but I think that he is, like, fluorescent in skin tone, and I'm like, you look ghostly.
I thought of Ben Soffer.
Oh, that's weird.
He's fluorescent in skin tone, and he wears glasses.
Like, that's just weird. Like,
isn't it? This is like
a love story.
Like, she talks about wanting to climb
him. Honestly, I just came up with that point 5 seconds ago because I couldn't come up with anyone, and then I thought of who's like a celebrity that wears glasses.
Because you saw the name Ben.
That's all for celebrity.
Yeah, literally. Ben.
Great. Dana?
Ryan Reynolds.
Okay. I had Finn Wittrock. He was in Luckiest Girl Alive. He just is always looks like a businessman, Bo.
That's a good one.
He has like a square face.
Yeah. Yeah, he's... You can never say it about a girl.
I was just thinking that.
The thing is, like, he's so good looking, like, it's just not offensive.
I like that, though. Like, you, like, think that it's, like, an offensive thing. Like, that's, like, my favorite quality
and also,
in a man.
Isn't that something that, like, authors are always like, he had a square jaw.
Like, chiseled. Yeah, it's like, the best.
Yeah, it's like a compliment.
Okay, great. Now it is time for our rating of this book. Bex, let's start with you. What would you give this?
I gave it a 3 out of 5.
Snitch.
2.8.
Me, 2.5. Dana?
2.3.
Overall, Redhead's rating of The Dead Romantics is a 2.65. Let's pull up our Redhead's ranking, shall we?
Snitch.
Michelle. What?
Feels right.
Okay, sorry. I should have had my sheet up. Okay, 2.65 makes it right above our country friends.
There you go.
You suck.
Number 45 out of 46.
Whoa. Honestly, you guys, that's fair.
We were on a streak.
We were on a really good streak.
We were on a really good streak.
I want to be clear that it is a 93% and a 4.4. Like, I was misled.
We're wild over here. Our rankings are out of control. They don't, like, have a rhyme or reason. They are what they are.
On our three-year anniversary, we should all re-rank.
I love that, except we're coming up on 4 years.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the other books that we read this month. Snitch, did you read anything?
I did. So I read the third book in the series of The Things We Never Got Over. This is The Things We Left Behind, and it wasn't that good. I wouldn't bother reading the full series. Like, just read the first one and you're set. Then I read, finally, The Housemaid and The Housemaid's Secret. Both good, easy books. Kind of really freaked me the fuck out. But besides that, good books. I do like Freda McFadden's books. They're very digestible. And then I read Mrs. Nash's Ashes, which was like a book that Emily told me to read because she thought I would like it. And she was kind of wrong. It was fine. But you guys, you know what comes out on Monday?
Iron Flame. I already pre-ordered.
Me too.
I'm so excited.
Me too.
And that's it.
Okay, great. Well, we'll be recapping Iron Flame. Like, we'll do a mini recap next month. Okay, sure. Okay, Bex, what did you read on your honeymoon?
I'm actually really happy to do this section because I canvassed the Redheads to help guide me for my honeymoon book reads. And I promised to do an update because I actually got a lot of DMs being like, what did you end up reading? So, Jax, maybe we could do a post because I feel like I owe it to the crew.
And we owe a Becky book dump.
Yes, we owe a Becky book dump, but mostly, like, I asked so many Redheads for recommendations, so I just want to let them know. But I was terrible about updating because, like, the world was on fire while I was gone, and so I was just like, I'm going to stick with my own thoughts right now. I read, during my honeymoon, The Unhoneymooners. That was the number one recommendation. It wasn't for me, I'm not going to lie. It was just a little simple. Not simple. It was just like a little silly, and it wasn't what I was looking for. I also read Yellow Face, which is a pretty like hot of the moment book.
Yeah, seen it.
I thought it was really good and just like an interesting read. So I gave that a 4 out of 5. I gave The Unhoneymooners a 3 out of 5. And then I read Dark Matter, which was a book that Dana and Josh Webman have been recommending to me. And they recommended to my husband, who did not read it. So I read it. And then he got so jealous because it was so good that he ended up reading Recursion, which is by the same author.
Oh, my God. We need to discuss
that. Dark Matter was awesome. Could not recommend it more. I gave it like a 4.3 out of 5. And that was it. So I read 3 books.
That's good.
I read 4 books this month. That's like a book a week.
That is a lot.
Thanks. That's great. Dana, what about you?
So I read Tom Lake by Ann Patchett, her new
book. How was it?
I really liked it. I don't think the Redheads would mimic my enthusiasm, but I just think she's an incredible writer, and it was like really up my alley. So I recommend it.
Jax, that was the one that we spoke about that I almost selected.
That we almost
picked. Wonderful.
But I'm also glad to hear that, like, Dana's not like, oh, we should have read it. So.
No. And also, it was a little COVID-y, so, like, I know how we felt about our country friends. Like, it might have gotten the same backlash. But if you like Ann Patchett's other books, I highly recommend this one. I gave it a 4.5. Then I read A History of Present Illness by Anna DeForest. I gave it a 3.5. If you recommended this to me, please come forward. I have no idea how it ended up on my Kindle. I literally saw it one day, and I was like, I must have downloaded this for a reason. I don't even remember what it was about. It was extremely, like, not noteworthy. So, 3.5. Then I read Talking at Night by Claire Daverly. I gave that a 3.8. I think Snitch would really like this. It's like a sophisticated rom-com, a little frustrating with, as Jackie was saying before, all the back and forth between people before they realize they like each other. But overall, great book. And then last, I read The Camper and the Counselor by Jackie Ashray.
Hey.
It's so funny seeing it on my Kindle when I'm going to do this exercise. I'm like, oh my God, this counts. This counts towards book goal.
I would like to add that to my book.
You have
too.
To. It's so
yeah,
funny.
Add it. Mark it as read on Goodreads. Give it 5 stars. This goes for everyone who did read it. Like, tell Goodreads you read it and gave it, you know, the amount of stars that you want to give it. I think that it deserves 5, but, you know, whatever.
I want to be clear that I have read it 100 times to my nieces and nephews, and they could not be more obsessed. You guys, I'm not biased. Well, I mean, I obviously am because Jackie's my best friend, but it is such a good book. The kids love it. They are so entranced by it. Like, if you need 5 minutes of calm, read this book to them, and they will be straightforward listening. I don't care how young they are. Everyone's in a trance when reading The Camper and the Counselor.
No, it's so true. Like, obviously, I would say nice things about my book because I wrote it, but there is something, like, magical about the book and how the kids just really love it. I do think it is the illustrations. Just, it looks like, you know, what they see on TV, which it's hard to compete with TV. Like, why would a kid want to read a book when there's a huge 60-inch TV in front of them? But, like, these are really vivid illustrations that paint a picture, and the rhymes are really fun, and, like, the kids can get involved. Like, it really is addictive.
My sister was obsessed with the illustrations, and she has a young child, so she sees a lot of books. She's like, these illustrations are miraculous. The bulbs on the bunk beds, they come to life.
Counselor Snitch is hot.
That's what all the dads say.
That's what all the kids say, too.
There's something for everyone in the book. Is that everything you read, Dana?
Yes.
Okay, I only finished one book this month. The other book, I'm at like 80%. I had to put it down for this month's Redheads book. But I read Becoming Molly May by Molly Hogg. Molly May Hogg, she's from Love Island, and I'm obsessed with her and her Instagram. And then, like, I literally was watching her vlogs, and she wrote a book a few years ago, so I was like, let me read her book. It would have been hard for any book to capture my attention this month because it's been an incredibly hard month, and my mind is completely elsewhere. With that said, like, there wasn't that much to grab me within this book. One of my favorite things about Molly May is that she is a new mama, and this book was written well before she had a child. So my favorite part of her life wasn't even included in the book, and it was more sort of, like, about, you know, her getting, like, lip filler and all this stuff that I'm just, like, not super engaging with right now. So I love her, and it was a really cute book, but it was missing Bambi, which is her daughter. But that makes sense because she wrote it before she was engaged or had a baby. So that's all I read this month. That's all we read. That's all we wrote. And we will see you next month. I hope everyone has a great month. Wait, Dana, what are we reading next month?
Okay, people, we are traversing genre boundaries a little bit with this next pick. It is The Woman in Me by Britney Spears.
Wait, I'm so excited. So excited.
Britney Spears' memoir. Speaking of ghostwriters.
Literally another ghost story, but I love this for us. One, because we're doing something new and this is a book everyone's talking about, and so everyone who's reading the book, which is everyone, I think she's breaking like crazy sales records now, everyone can come to the Redheads to hear us discuss it.
Wait, I'm so pumped because I want to read it so badly and now I have no excuse.
Totally. Same. And I feel like I would want to read it so badly but wouldn't actually read it because I just don't do celebrity memoirs, so like this is a great opportunity too.
Agreed. I'm so excited. I love this for us. It's the last book of the year. And also make sure that you guys get your rankings in for best books of the year. We're going to do all of that when we talk next month. So thank you to the Redheads for participating. Thank you to the Redheads at home listening. And we will see you next month. We love you.
Love ya. Bye.